Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 8. You aren't going to go with it tonight anyway, so we'll get on the scripture. All right, verse 8. Verse 8 says, there is no man that hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit, neither hath he power in the day of death, and there is no discharge in that war, neither shall wickedness deliver those that are given to it. Now, whether you ever thought about that verse or not, I've often thought about it, but didn't know what to do with it. And that verse says, no man hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit. In plain words, when it comes time for you to die, you haven't got power to stay alive. No man hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit. I know one man that did. He said, no man taketh my spirit from me. I have power to lay it down and pick it up again. So the one man that ever lived that had power to lay down the spirit and then pick it up. But as far as you're concerned, you don't have the power to lay down your spirit when you want to lay it down. You say, well, I think I'll just kill myself tonight and prove you wrong. Or you make a mess of it. You'll probably shoot yourself and the bullet hits your skull and go around the skull and come out the front someplace. You'll probably botch the job. You'll take sleeping pills. They won't be strong enough to kill you, and you have to get your stomach pumped out down to the hospital. Folks say, well, I can go when I want to go. No, you can't. You haven't got the power over the spirit, and you can't keep the spirit if the Lord's going to take it. If the Lord takes the spirit, then you'll return to the dust, your body, and the spirit shall return to God who gave it. And nobody in this building, if the Lord wanted to take you home tonight, there isn't anybody in this building that could resist it. That's one reason I have never taken really seriously since I've been saved. I've never taken science, religion, or education seriously since I've been saved. I've looked what they had to say and, you know, thought about it, but not seriously. I mean, if the Lord wanted to take you home tonight, could you stop him? Is a man in this building, if God said tonight, your time's up, 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1, what could you do about it? Well, you might not even know what was going on. You might lie in your bed and the Lord give you the countdown at 12:30. You just wouldn't wake up for breakfast in the morning. No man hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit. Then he said, neither hath he power in the day of death. And this is my text, and there is no discharge. There is no discharge in that war. There is no discharge in that war. What war is he talking about? Well, look at the text carefully. Neither hath he power in the day of death, and there's no discharge in that war. What war? The war of death. You're in a battle. When you're born in this world, death starts working on you and works on you the day you die. You're in a struggle with death from the time you come in to the time you leave. And there is no discharge in that war. Recently, we had a war where they called back to active duty 50,000 men that had already been in combat in that same war. I never heard of such thing. Fellow spent his time overseas in war, bring home, try to take a rest, send him right back into it. And I think they drafted Marines over there in Vietnam, didn't they? I wouldn't want to slander them. I think they drafted Marines, that kind of thing. Marines ceased to be a volunteer outfit. Had a strange war. And still, it's going on and it's still strange. And I'll preach about that someday. I know of a lieutenant commander in the Navy that his time was up, and when he got back to the States, they fixed it so he couldn't resign. And they fixed that thing so he couldn't get out. When he wanted to get out and time to get out and wanted to quit, they fixed that thing so he couldn't get out, and he went right back in. Big stink about it. Big article in the magazine about it and everything else. And there's no discharge in that war. Now, there are certain ways and times and means whereby a man can get a discharge. And you fellows have been in the service, you know how it goes. And if you have been in the service, you've got a blessing coming. Indubitably, like Pogo would say. Pogo never says indubitably, he says indubitably. I always thought that was a good way to say it. And you got a real blessing coming. And when a guy gets in service and doesn't want to stay in the service, he's looking forward to the day of his discharge. And he counts the days. I've stopped the GI and said, when do you get out? He says, 2 years, 6 months, 3.5 weeks, 5 hours, and 15 minutes. I mean, he got the thing right down, see, and he just marks them off. When I was overseas in World War II, we were in the army occupation in Japan, or Philippines. Well, we were at Japan later, but Philippines first. And the army occupation of the Philippines, it rained and rained and rained and rained, and like the old song says, the natives steal and fight, mosquitoes sting and bite, and the soldiers sing whenever they get sore. And there was a song, hillbilly song they were singing then, called 99 Years, Boys, is a Mighty Long Time. And I wrote some new words to it, you know. I wrote some words to it, 44 months, boys, a mighty long time. And that song was something about it rained last night and it rained the day after that. We're all slowly drowning and we'll never get back. And no ships in the harbor from that country of mine. 44 months is a mighty long time. And we're waiting for ships to come in the middle of the harbor and get us on home. And we had what we call the point system. And when a guy reached so many points, then he was supposed to get out and be eligible to come on home. And so a 40-point man went, you know, 35-point man and 25-point man. You had to wait for your point system to come up. Everybody anxious to get out. Now, my text says there's no discharge in this war, the war I'm talking about right now. So I'm talking about a war that once you get in this battle, and every man, woman, and child in this building is in this battle, you can't get out. You said, that'd be horrible, be an army and be unable to get out any way in the world. Yeah, it would be, but that's the fight you're in, and there's no discharge in that war. He doesn't have power over the spirit to retain the spirit. He doesn't have power in the day of death, and there's no discharge in that war. Now, there are a number of ways to get discharges. For example, in the Old Testament, you know what the Lord told him? In the Old Testament, the Lord told him, he said this. He said, when we go into battle, you're to call all Israel in, and then you're to tell Israel this. You're to tell Israel who's ever faint-hearted. Whoever is faint-hearted and doesn't want to go down to combat, said, you tell him, go back to your house. And get on home, lest you cause the fellow next to him, his buddy, to faint in action and defect to the enemy. The Lord allowed him to get out on grounds of faint-heartedness in the Old Testament. But this is one war you can't get out of even if you're faint-hearted. You say, Brother Ruckman, I don't want to die. Well, maybe not, but just being scared won't get you out of it. You still have to die. There's no discharge in that war. Faint-heartedness won't get you out. In the Army, when they need infantrymen, brother, they get them. And I don't care if you're faint-hearted or not or a draft dodger, they'll get you. We had a joke in World War II toward the end. They called a guy in there and they said, inhale, exhale, you sail. That was the physical exam. Inhale, exhale, you sail. And they said, in this Vietnam War, they called a guy in one time. They said, you see that chair? He said, yeah. He said, sit down. Guy sat down, and he said, okay, leave, you're in. And the guy said, I'm in. He said, A1, A1. And he said, what do you mean, A1? He said, well, you see all right, you saw the chair, you heard all right, you sat down, you obeyed, you left when I told you to leave, A1, send him on. And so they want him, brother, they're going to get him. They got a joke currently going about a fella comes to the inducting station and goes in, and he doesn't have any arms. And he walks in, they say, A1, send him on in. And the guy says, A1? He said, I haven't got any arms. We've got a place for you. They sent him on out of a repo depot, Fort Ord someplace, and sent him out there in a company in the replacement depot. And he said, what am I going to do? I don't have any arms. And they said, well, you see that blind man over there? Fill up those buckets with water. The guy said, yeah. And he said, well, he can't see when it's full. You go over there and tell him when each one of them is full. Now, you know that's kind of stretching things a little, but I'll tell you, brother, when they want them now, they're going to get them. When they want them, they're going to get them. And faint-heartedness isn't going to get you out of it. So there's no discharge in that war, and that isn't all. You're not going to get out for good conduct. I think some people think they're immune from death just because they've been behaving themselves right. Why, listen, Paul was a great man and a good man. He wasn't immune. He died. Stephen was a great and good man. He didn't get out. There was no discharge for him, brother. They killed him in a pit. You can't get out in good conduct. They have what they call a good conduct ribbon they give to trainees, and I suppose indicates that you're a real good fella. And you can't get out in good conduct, and what's worse, you can't get out on bad conduct. Sometimes, especially in this modern setup, if a guy is real bad, they don't want him in. They say he's undesirable. They say he's not physically or mentally equipped. They say unfit for military service, and they get the guy and get rid of him. But this is one thing here. It don't make a difference whether you're fit for service or not. There's no discharge in that war. Listen, you can behave yourself bad or behave yourself good. You'll still have to fight the fight. And no man hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit. Neither is any discharge in that war. I think every Christian, and I very seldom do this. I don't remember doing it more than my 3 times in my life. Very seldom do I ever recommend to a Christian to read any of the books put out by worldly people just in the world. But honest, I think that just about every Christian man ought to read a book called No Time for Sergeants. And I don't know the guy's name, but you ought to read that book. I mean, it's a clean book for an army book, it really is. And one of the funniest books you ever read in your life. One of the funniest things you ever read in your life. And that's a story about a guy whose conduct is such that the army would have given anything if they just could have got him out for his conduct. And his conduct wasn't bad, it wasn't good, it was erratic. But you ought to read about that thing. And you get these misfits, you know. You get some old hillbilly from Carolina in the service, you know, or Mississippi, Alabama. This happens all the time. This happened more than once. It's typical, but it happened more than once. A guy will come in there, one of these old hillbillies, getting there the first day, an officer will go by and come down the street waiting for his salute, you know, and this old hillbilly say, howdy, morning there. You know. That old guy, soldier, come back here, catch up, you know, blam, 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 just ream him out and cut him through and through and get all through and say, now, what do you got to say about that? And that old hillbilly say, well, Shucks, man, if I'd known you were going to carry on like that, I wouldn't even said hello to you. Now, that's typical. That's typical. Typical. And, you know, nowadays they call those fellows undesirable or unfit for military service, and they get rid of them. But over here in this text I'm reading here, he says, there's no discharge. There's no discharge in that war. Not this one here. And that is, no, you can't get out on account of rank. You say, well, I'll get to a certain rank, and then I'll get out. No, and they'll have respect for my rank. Death has no respect of rank. Death is no respect of persons. Death had no respect for the rank of the greatest generals that ever lived. You have field officers. You have commissioned officers. You have non-commissioned officers. You fellows been in grade for years and years and years. You have fellows all kinds of hash marks and points and stuff laid up in their account. But death is no respecter of persons, and you can't get out just on the ground that you're a higher-ranking military officer. Why, death has no more respect for a lieutenant commander than a boot seaman. Death has no more respect for a four-star general than a buck private. There's no discharge in that war. If man has got power, he doesn't have power to retain the spirit, to give up the spirit, and there's no discharge in that war. It's a favorite thing in the service when a man does wrong to bust him, break him in ranks. They call it busting him. And, you know, there's many an old sergeant that's been busted about 18 times and worked his way back up the sergeant again. That's a common thing in the non-com ranks. In the non-coms, fella get the sergeant, oh, God, get on a big old drunken bender and come in. They'll bust him, you know, and then promote him back up again about a year, and then bust him again, promote him back up in a couple of years. You know, good man, you can't afford to lose him, but you can't afford to let him get away with it, so you keep busting him. They took one old boy, and he got tech sergeant. They had a bunch of stripes on his sleeve. He knew he was going to get busted and stripped of his rank. So he sewed a corporal's stripes on under his sergeant stripes. And then he went in to see the commanding officer, and the captain said, I'm going to bust you down, soldier, and stepped up to strip off that insignia, and that fellow just reached up and and there was the corporal, and that old company commander said, let's see you do it again. Down to nothing. Listen, some folks think because they attain a high station in life that they're going to get out of it. Death has no more respect for a lawyer or a doctor than it does a newspaper boy or a bootblack. Rank won't get you out. There's no discharge in that war. No discharge. You take Rommel, he's a great man, but he died. You take Charlemagne, he was a great soldier, but he died. You take David. David was a great soldier. David, one of the greatest generals that ever lived, but he had to die. You take Rommel, he fought and fought with such ferocity and such cunning and such cleverness and such power, and he was so ethical and so chivalrous about it that his enemies grudgingly had to admit that he was a great, great general. Winston Churchill got in the air one time, BBC, all over the world, and broadcast that thing and said, we're up against a brave and clever enemy. You know, I hated to say it, but had to say it. And the man was good. And one of the greatest generals that ever lived. Yet you know what happened to Rommel? Old Rommel went across Africa and fought to El Alamein and then got put back there at the Amahafa Ridge and came back and fought through El Agalia and up into Tunisia. And when that fellow came back to Tunisia, he was decimated. He was outnumbered about 10 to 1 on tanks and about 20 to 1 on airplanes and about 4 to 1 on men. And after fighting clean across Africa 2,000 miles and clean back 2,000 miles, he got back there on a running retreat, running for days and nights at a time, out of water, out of petrol. And when he got there decimated and just half left, he smacked in the American division at Kasserine Pass and just whipped the fire out of him. Just licked the tar out of him. Finally, when he got through that thing and realized that Hitler wasn't going to help him, wasn't going to help his men, and wasn't going to have no use for his men and had no use for the condition of his men, Rommel got in a plot to assassinate Hitler with von Brauchitsch and General Beck. And those fellows planted a bomb under Hitler's table. The thing blew off and just injured him, didn't kill him. And a couple of days after that thing was over, they were after the conspirators, and Rommel's name came up. And a big old black Mercedes Benz came up there alongside Rommel's house, and a couple of men got out. Rommel said to his wife, says Gestapo, he said, now have the funeral, and don't worry about a thing, and enough to take care of you and the children. You know I've done right, so don't worry about it. Walked out the door. The Gestapo put him in the back end of the car, and they drove off from the house a couple hundred yards, and the Gestapo turned to him and said, I guess you know why we're here. And he said, yeah, I know why you're here. And the Gestapo agent says, Himmler says, if you take this pill, I will give you an honorary funeral, and you'll be a great hero, and I'll make a statue in your name, and your wife and children get a pension from the government. And if you don't, you'll be hauled up for a people's trial and stripped of your rank and disgrace, and your children go to the concentration camp. Take your choice. And so that brave and bold man found out there was no discharge in that war, and he reached out and took the pills. He died and they had a funeral, you know, and one of those big old funerals where all the stormtroopers came by in the black shiny boots and the white gloves, and they played a famous old German piece called Ich hatte einen Kameraden, I had a comrade. Very sentimental, very stirring thing. And Hitler went up there and played a wreath on that tombstone, you know, and all that kind of business, and back the march, and the chief sculptor for the government said to Mrs. Rommel, he said, I'm going to make a statue in honor of your husband. He said, I thought perhaps it'd do to have a statue of a wounded lion. Would you rather have a statue of a wounded lion dying when an arrow stuck him, or perhaps a lion about to spring? And Mrs. Rommel never answered. She never answered. She ignored it. She knew what happened. She knew exactly what happened. Great, brave, and bold man, but he had to die. He had to die. There's no discharge in that war. Napoleon was a great man, a great general, one of the greatest, but he had to die. Charlemagne was a great general, a great man, one of the greatest military leaders that ever lived, but Charlemagne came to the end of the rope. And they had his burial place over there in Aix-Chapelle in France. And one day they were digging around there in the ruins of that place during World War I. And when they got digging around there, they busted into the tomb and saw that old skeleton sitting up there in that chair with a ring falling off the bony hand and the scepter dropped into the lap and the cobwebs on that thing. Touch that old bony thing, turn to dust, crumble under the touch. Death, death. There's no discharge in that war. You know, I wish I could get out of dying. I wish, you know, Americans just don't think about it. They watch everybody else get killed on television, and it just never occurs to them they're going to die. But if you ever just stop thinking about dying, go out in your backyard when you get home tonight. And this would be a nice thing to do in 20th century Pensacola. It's really up to date, man. Something brand new for kicks. And lie down there in the back of this, lie down in the dirt in the backyard. Just lie down on the ground. Just look up in the air. See how it looks. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. You're going to go someday, and they're going to put you down. And there's no discharge in that war, and you can't get out on account of medals. Or you can't get awards and get out, and Congressional Medal of Honor like Audie Murphy. And some of those old boys were just, they had medals and decorations all over them. They looked like, they're decorated like a Christmas tree. Have you ever noticed how these hippies want to wear these iron crosses? Yeah. You ever notice that? These hippies and these hot rodder fellas, iron crosses? I bet you they wouldn't want to do what you got to do to get you an iron cross. Not even a second or third class iron cross. And people think because they get awards and get medals that they're going to get out of it some way. I think some men think because they've been president of the Rotary Club and president of this and president of that and vice secretary of this, when a famous man dies, they always have a list there a mile long of everything he belonged to. And they say he was a member of this and he was a member of that and he was a member of the other. He was decorated from the time he was born to the time he died. But brother, he doesn't have power to attain the spirit and he doesn't have power in the day of death, and there's no discharge in that war. You can't get out on the grounds of medals. And you can't get out on grounds of time overseas. They used to do that. A fellow spends so much time overseas, like I was telling you, on the points, and they let the fellow back in. But you won't get out in time overseas. Some people have funny ideas about that. The Marines have a famous motto, you know. They say something about St. Peter. When St. Peter come up there in a gate, you know, about to get in there, while they have a thing going there where you say, well, St. Peter, you got to let this fellow in because he served his time in hell. That's a favorite one the Marines have, you know. This fellow got in Vietnam or Korea, he served his time in hell, and I can get in. You know, kidding yourself, you're kidding yourself. You don't get out of it just because of time overseas. The fellow said he spent his time in hell. Nobody in this building's ever spent his time in hell. You might have spent some time in infantry battlefield, and I grant you that's as close to hell as you can get without getting there, but you never spend the time in hell. And when Audie Murphy got back from overseas and made that movie out in California called To Hell and Back, he's just kidding himself. He never went to hell and back. He got pretty close to it. I guess an infantry battlefield is about as close to hell as you can get without getting there, but he never went to hell and back. And folks have funny things about that. You know, they think they're going to get out on, get out on points or something. You have some religions think you're going to go down there and burn for a while, and after you've been, you know, in foreign country, done your duty, you know, with somebody praying for you, after a while you're going to come out. No, you're not. No, you're not. It is appointed a man once to die and after this the judgment, and there's no discharge in that war. You're not going to get out. And if I'm talking to somebody here tonight that has some vain hope about getting to purgatory, and after you spend, say, a couple of hundred years there, a couple of million years, or a couple of billion years that you're going to get out, then you better abandon all hope, because there's no discharge in this war, and there's no way you can get out. And you can't get out for good conduct or bad conduct. You can't get out for time overseas. And you can't get out for a Section 8. For a Section 8. How many of you fellas know what a Section 8 is? Let me see your hands. Well, about half of you. Section 8 means you're you know, squirrels. And a lot of guys, you know, they'd profess like they're crazy, you know, in order to get out. In Flanders Field, a lot of them got shell-shocked, and they weren't pretending. There was guys that came back from Flanders Field. A lot of them were British. Most of them were British. And when they came back to there, they'd find a guy wandering along like this with this kind of a glazed look in his face, mud all over him from head to foot, rifle gone, gas mask gone, clothes all torn to pieces. Say, what's your name? The fellow just look at him. They say, where's your outfit? And he just look at him. They say, where are you going? He just look at him. They'd turn some of them around, they'd start walking off in the opposite direction. I mean, mine just completely gone, just crazy. Shell shock. Lying out there in the mud, just bombardment day in and day out. I'd give them a Section 8, get rid of them. Did you know that not even crazy people are exempt from death? They die in the state insane asylums all the time. All the time. There's no discharge in that war. No man hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit, neither hath he power in the day of death, and there's no discharge in that war. Section 8 isn't going to get you out. A lot of them would fake it, you know, and try to get a Section 8 by doing all kinds of things. The classic illustration is the guy that comes into the orderly room, you know, some morning and picks up the paper and says, nope, that's not it. He goes in the waste basket. Nope, that isn't it. CO says, what you doing here, you blankety blank? Get back to the barracks. Guy goes outside, lifts up the rug. Nope, that ain't it. Goes around, looks in the back in the trash cans. Nope, that isn't it. Pretty soon the sergeant begins to watch him. He goes around, looks up the guy's canteen. Nope, that isn't it. Lifts up a helmet. Nope, that isn't it. And they take him down there and give him a Section 8, you know, and hand it to him, and he says, that's it. One of these old hippies went down to the induction center to get, you don't want to get out of the draft. He got down there and they said, man, you're A1, you're drafted. He said, you can't draft me. They said, why not? He said, I'm going to marry my father. And they said, you're going to what? He said, I'm going to marry my father. And they said, man, you're crazy. And he said, like, man, would you care to put that in writing? So, you know, people have all kinds of ways of getting out. But the text says there's no discharge in this war here. There's no way you can get out. You're going to have to die. I'd sure like to get around it, wouldn't you? You know, if there's some way to get on out of here without dying, wouldn't you like to find it? I wish I could just find some way. I just don't. Of course, after you did, don't make any difference. But, I mean, I just don't like the idea of just sitting in the hospital and just rotting away on my stumps and hospital bills going up and room bills going up and eating up all your property and all you can leave your kids a bill for about $2,000. That just don't appeal to me. I wish there was some way to get around that thing. No man hath power to retain the spirit. No man hath power in the day of death. Neither is there any discharge in that war, my text says. And last of all, I want to say that there's no way to get around this thing through hash marks. What's a hash mark? Well, it's like a reenlistment. They call them hash marks in the old days because the guy kept going back to get more hash to eat. And that's about all they had to eat back in the old days was just hash. And it isn't much better. I haven't been in lately, so I don't know what they're serving now. But the Army is notorious for ruining your taste for just about anything. I only eat breakfast one day a week. I eat breakfast Sunday morning and take my boys out and buy them breakfast, but that's the only time I can make breakfast. And I used to like breakfast real well. I mean, you know, bacon and eggs and all that and toast. But boy, I'll tell you, that Army, if they can't fix that thing for you, man, get you up there at 5 o'clock, and about 5:30 you fall out, and 6 o'clock you're on that chow hall. Boy, maybe a cold, snowy, sleety morning, you come out chow hall at 6 o'clock and sit down, here comes this breakfast. And sometime when they have real eggs, they're just so thin and watery that they shake, you know. It looks like a bubble dancer just sitting there going like, I like eating a raw oyster. And then in comes the toast, man. The guy cooked it at 4 in the morning, just like hardtack. And burnt, you know, on one side, raw on the other. Put your teeth down through one side and it goes, whoosh, and hits the crust on the other side, likes to bust your teeth out. And then in comes the bacon. And the bacon is always, I've never seen it when it was cooked. I have never seen cooked bacon in the Army. If there's such a thing as cooked bacon, I've never seen it. It's just, you can take any stick of bacon and just wiggle it like that. And just go flip, 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 flip on the end like that. You can string that stuff up and use it for a belt. And then when they run out, that's the good food. That's the good stuff. When you get that, it's a bonanza. And then when the really comes in, you know, it's just the toast and the eggs are powdered eggs. And it's the powdered eggs and powdered milk. And I'll never be able to understand it to my dying day how they did it. But I'm not lying. I know you think I'm lying, but I'm not. Honest to goodness, I had powdered eggs one morning and I had eggshells in them. Did. Well, the guy must have busted a couple up in there to convince you you're getting the right thing or what, but the whole thing was powdered eggs and there were shells in the powdered eggs. Maybe some guy put that in the box to make it more realistic, you know, so you could kind of think you're really getting fed when you're eating that stuff. But they used to say hash marks because in a hash outfit, you know what a hash slinger is. And the old days of World War I, the guy go back to get him some more chow. Well, every time he reenlist, you know, put on another stripe, 3 more years, or so many more months. Some of these guys got stripes all over them. You ever see those stripes down there? and some have wound stripes, and then hash, they call them the hash marks, too mean the guy got cut. And they have these hash marks all over, tell how long the guy's been in and how much he's been chopped on. And you think after a guy had been through all that stuff, he could get out, and he can in the Army, but he can't get out of this. He can't get out of this. One time, one of those old battle-scarred veterans came back to the States. They wrote up a newspaper article about him, and they called him the battle-scared veteran. And they insisted the company rewrite the copy, and they rewrote it and wrote down the bottle-scarred veteran. And that happens once in a while, too. You know, I love old infantrymen, and I really feel sorry for them. But I love them as a class of people, I guess, more than any other class of people. And I never met very many old infantrymen, very few of them that weren't, toward the end, weren't just dead inside drunkards. And it's one of the greatest tragedies in the world. Right up this road here at Palafox, about 2 miles, a fellow up there, and I haven't seen him now for a couple of years. Used to go by there about once every 2 or 3 months and talk with him. And he's an old retired sergeant. I mean, Silver Star and Bronze Star, everything but the Congressional Medal, and the Spearhead Invasions, left chest, you know, looked like an Army-Navy store and had his uniform on. That old boy just drinking himself to death. Won't get saved, won't receive Christ. I sit down and talk with him. He'll tell me about some of the action he's been in, what he's done, and how it went. And I've often sat there and on the porch talking to that fella and thought to myself, my God, think about a fella going through that and then not getting right. It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. Eddie Rickenbacker, one of these fellows that was out in a raft, and he gave his testimony about how they were preserved in this raft, and talk about one fella praying. But you know, in Eddie Rickenbacker's testimony, I've never seen in his whole testimony any evidence that he himself ever received Jesus Christ, was born again, through that whole ordeal. What a pity. What a shame. Met a fellow at the Preacher's Fellowship, must have been about last week. His name was Moody, and we ordained him here in the church about 8 or 9 years ago and sent him out to preach. And that fellow has a brother that was in action over in Germany and went clear through Germany and right outside of Berlin somewhere. He was pretty well on edge after months and months of action. He was going along there and shot some German, went on past him. The German rose up behind him, wounded, and started to cut him down with a burp gun. And he turned around just in time to see it. One of his other buddies shot him and finished him off and went over to loot the body. And Moody's brother went back and kicked him off and said, "He's mine. I got him first anyway. Get away." And got him on the way and stripped the fellow of his watch and everything, got his wallet, and took out his wallet, and in that wallet he found a picture of that German's wife and children. And that isn't the first time that's happened either, but he got looking at that thing and just got sick as a dog, just went half crazy. It wasn't good for anything the rest of the time. And Moody said he'd walk along behind the column all the way through the rest of the fights up outside Berlin and say, "I'm never going to get back, I'm never going to get back, I'm never going to get back, I'm never going to get back." And he took to drinking. And he got back. And he got back to the United States and stayed in the Army, a 30-year man, and they put him down at Fort Benning. And of all places in the world they put him down at Fort Benning and put some little shave tail over him there. Only been out of OCS about a month. And if every place is the wrong place for a combat man, it's down at Fort Benning under somebody that just came through. They could have put that guy anywhere. And he kept talking about action, getting drunk. And finally that lieutenant said, "You get drunk one more time, we'll court-martial you." And you know something? That fellow was up within, I think, 2 months of finishing his 30 years when he got washed out and court-martialed and discharged. Lost the whole cotton-picking thing. 28 years of it, man. 29 and so many months. 29 and so many months. He's up in Carolina right now just drinking himself to death. He's probably dead by now. That's been 8, 9 years ago. He's probably dead by now. That's a pity, isn't it? You know, I wish there was some way to keep from dying. I wish I'd get a discharge. You reckon there's any way a fella can get a discharge and get out before that thing hits? You know, I was just thinking, what if they had a big old meeting of all the scientists all together, you know, and all the scholars and all the preachers and teachers, and they all got together in a big National Association of Geographic, Scientific, Amalgamated, Cooperated, Confluated, Lanolated, Postulated, Unionized, Flopdoodle, and they all got together, you know, and all got talking, and then one of them went around the table and said, "We've got to find some way to stop this dying and get rid of death, and let's all give each one his contribution to scientific knowledge about how you think the problem can be solved, you know." And I just thought, well, what if I was sitting there? And they got around to me, finally, and said, Dr. Ruckman, what contribution do you have to make?" I'd say, "Well, gentlemen," I'd say, "it would seem to me, after many years investigating this problem, that the best possible and most highly scientific solution would be for all of us to be like Enoch." Wouldn't that go over like a wet balloon, man? I mean, like Enoch. Who there would know Enoch? Why, Enoch was the only man in the Bible that never died and never will die. Elijah didn't die, but he will. Christ died. Enoch had a privilege God's Son didn't have. You know, if you could just find out how to be like Enoch, you'd have it made, wouldn't you? No discharge in that war. If a fellow could find out how to be like Enoch, why, he could beat the thing. You know what the Bible says about Enoch? The Bible says about Enoch, before he was translated, he had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. So when I read my Bible about Enoch, I learn something. I learn if I want to get a discharge from death, and if I want to get out without dying, I've only got one hope. I've got to be like Enoch. And the Bible says by faith Enoch was translated. I've got to have faith. Because he had this testimony that he pleased God. And ladies and gentlemen, I read in the New Testament where the Lord said about his Son Jesus Christ, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." You want to please God? Trust his Son. "This is my beloved Son whom I am well pleased." Hear him. You want to please God? You want to get a discharge for the final battle? Trust his Son. Trust his Son. I don't say you won't have the final battle. He had it. But there's always that possibility that one of these days or one of these nights he's coming, and when he comes, every man that's trusted him gets an honorable discharge, just like that. And it's all over. The battle's all over. All right, let's bow our heads for prayer. Father, bless the message tonight. If there's any boy or girl, man or woman, this building is unsaved, I pray the Holy Spirit to speak to the heart about this matter right now. May they see they're going to have to face this combat soldier someday, and they can't win. There's no way out of it. There's no way to get around it. I mean, they're not be so foolish as these people that talk about making this world a better place to live in when they're all going to have to leave it. And I pray, Father, in Jesus' name, they'll trust your Son right now as a Savior. Now, this is well-pleasing in your sight. It'll please thee. And I know you'll accept those that come unto thee by Jesus Christ.